Digital advertising follows us around as we browse the internet, but the tactics being used, psychologically speaking, are getting more refined. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton speaks with a nationally known psychologist and author about how marketing is focused on us and our kids. And that chat starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. Digital marketing and advertising is largely a duopoly. So, if consumers can just avoid Google and Facebook, we wouldn't be as exposed to the ads that follow us, sometimes even seeming like they can read our minds or predict the future. For our next guest, an author and nationally syndicated consumer psychologist, there seems to be a lot of build a better mousetrap going on these days. Almost, but not quite, like putting polish on that old cliche of how to sell snake oil.
So I think there's a little bit of the emperor's new clothing here, that it's a pack mentality. It's a sales line that really works for consumers. Mm. And I'm not saying that some of those products aren't much better. A lot of them are better, you know, but most of them aren't. Most of them, you know, have a new distribution channel, and that's it.
Digital ad spending reached $209 billion worldwide in 2017, 41% of the market, while TV brought in $178 billion. That's 35% of the market in 2017. That's according to Magna, the research arm of media buying firm IPG Media Brands. Now, let's talk about digital marketing and how best to fend it off.
Well, it is doctor or professor, whatever one you want to use, but I do go by Kit.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just Kit Yarrow, your friendly local consumer psychologist.
I've been doing a lot of coverage on the duopoly of digital advertising, okay? Google, Facebook pretty much own it. Pretty much all the market share goes there. Then I was thinking, the shoes I am wearing at this very moment are called Allbirds.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I bought them, Kit, was because they wore me down with the advertising.
Exactly.
They really did. Is that a thing? Like, am I typical or atypical?
Yeah. So you're not the only one. I consider it a genuine phenomenon. So I think a lot of retailers are going on social media and they're saying, we've reinvented the shoe, the bra, jewelry, right, glasses, mattresses, you name it. And people are really falling for that. They love the idea that something is brand new. I think our use of technology has made us really enamored with this concept of innovation and newness. And so if companies can show us or prove to us that they are, in fact, new, that is a selling point that hasn't worked in the past. It works now, and we tend to fall for that.
Isn't it just kind of like a newer version or a digital version of building a better mousetrap?
Yeah, it's just that it's not always better. So I think the thing is that I feel like a lot of consumers are manipulated by this concept of reinvention, and they're not doing as good a job, I think, of evaluating, is this a product I really need or want?
Interesting.
And to your point, when products follow us around on social media, it does wear us down. There's a way where, like, contact after contact after contact makes us feel like this is something we should have in our lives. Consumers I've interviewed have said, well, I just seem like part of my life already. I went ahead and I purchased it. Everybody else is buying them. It seemed cool.
Sure.
It's the newest. It's the latest. But honestly, I don't like it as well as something else that I've had before. So I think there's a little bit of the emperor's new clothing here that, you know, it's a pack mentality. It's a sales line that really works for consumers. Mm. And I'm not saying that some of those products aren't much better. A lot of them are better, you know, but most of them aren't. Most of them, you know, have a new distribution channel, and that's it.
Listening to your answer, I kind of want to unpack one more thing, because as you were explaining that to me, and I resemble that remark, as they say. In this world of innovation and iteration and constant bombardment, and our screens are always in front of us, are we projecting something? I hate to use that word because you're a psychologist, I'm not. But I mean, what I mean is, like, if I buy the newest Allbirds or if I buy the newest whatever is out, even though it may not be better, I am participating in an innovation dynamic.
Yes.
Is that my motivation for being suckered so easily?
I think that's part of it. So, you know, it kind of starts with the concept that buying new things and having new things is emotionally gratifying to people. So in some ways, people are always sort of looking for ways to improve their life. And sometimes that comes through purchasing a vacation or purchasing a, you know, new pair of shoes or purchasing, like, back to school shopping, for example. A lot of the products kids buy to go back to school give them confidence and a motivation to start the new year with excitement. So I think we have to start with the notion that actually, as much as we're trying to consume less as a society, there are emotional benefits to purchasing things. in this case, though, the emotional benefit is kind of different because what consumers are buying is also this perception of themselves, of being more innovative, of being trendier, of being the unique one that knows to get this special product that isn't available, you know, at your local store, that you're the first one to find out about this reinvented blah, blah, blah.
There is something to that, being the first one to share something you found or something that you have first. And I noticed when I bought these Allbirds, I've had them for a long time now, but when I first got them, I had a coach on my daughter's softball team say, "I've been through two pair of those. Why did you buy them?" And I told exactly what I told you. I was like, I just got worn down.
You were hunted down.
I finally did. So retail therapy is a thing, and it's an okay thing?
Yeah, I think many of us are kind of in a period right now where we're thinking, geez, consuming takes a lot of money and it takes a lot of time. And how else would I like to spend my time and money? And especially post-recession, a lot of consumers are really looking more carefully at how they choose to spend their money. And they're thinking, well, I get more bang for my buck out of, for example, new technology than I do out of new clothing. So we're seeing this huge shift in retail where consumers are being more conscious. But nevertheless, since the beginning of human interaction, when people were like trading beads in the marketplace, there is something gratifying about having new things, about, you know, showing who you are through what you have.
Yeah.
You know, and all of those things are genuine and real, and it's part of being human.
I've seen it explained to me by non-psychology, but by a marketing analyst, that Google's our brain, Facebook's kind of our heart, Amazon's our gut, and Apple's our nards. So, like, you know, I am mateable, mate with me, I have an iPhone, that kind of thing, too. The status, right, the status that, that these companies kind of fill in. So we've kind of covered your take on the psychology of the advertising when it comes to digital a little bit. I mean, we scratched the surface.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
I think consumers are hopefully going to be more, a little more wary, a little bit harsher judge of what's coming. A, they need to not get worn down. They need to think to themselves, oh, God, this is the 15th time I've seen it. It's already a part of my life. I might as well buy it.
Mm.
And B, to like more harshly judge. Is it really reinvented? Is it really the right thing for me? Is a product that's been around for a long time just because it's an old company. Maybe that's actually a better product, and a lot of them are.
Okay, so let's talk about psychological techniques and kids.
Yeah.
Not necessarily back to school, right? We're just talking about like kids. Are they being submitted to things that are different than what I'm being submitted to?
Not necessarily. It's just that they work more effectively because kids aren't really old enough and their brains aren't developed enough, I think, to be as objective as they should be about some of these techniques that are being used. The two that scare me the most right now are vapes and videos, you know, or gaming. And I mean, I think both of these, oh my gosh, the manipulation that's used to get people to game longer is huge. I'm not saying that people in technology should make games less interesting, and most people aren't, you know, having a gaming disorder or really having problems with it and they're enjoying it. But what I feel like is parents have to really know how addictive these games can be and put limits on how much their kids can play them.
Right.
You know, all the same things that are used in casinos to get people to bet longer, intermittent reinforcement schedules, and, you know, reconnecting with other people, at least the perception that you're part of a team and a sense of obligation to others. A lot of these techniques are used to get people to game longer. I'm not in favor of any controls around that, but what I am in favor of is education, that parents really have to know that this is dangerous for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the more time kids spend gaming, the less time they spend face-to-face with other kids, which is where social learning takes place. So if you want to have a healthy adult, as a kid, they have to spend time with other kids, not online.
Okay, fair enough. Now, my daughter, I'll use her as a case study, as I often do on this show, because I'm learning.
That poor kid.
I'm learning as she learns, too. She has an Amazon Fire tablet, and I get a receipt for everything that she does. I get an email for everything that she does. And she samples. Like, if she gets up at 6 and I don't get up until 7 on the weekends, I'll go and she will have tried 12 new games.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
She's adventurous.
Yeah, but she doesn't seem to stick with them, and she never spends money. I don't give her the money. It's the first one's free kind of thing, right? So she gets in there and she tries that. Is that typical?
No, it's not actually. Usually kids do get kind of drilled down into one in particular, and then they get sucked into all the mechanisms that game is
using. All the hooks.
Yeah, like badges and rewards and, you know, connecting with other people that makes it feel real. So I wouldn't be too worried about that. I just, you know, make sure she's getting her stuff together to get out the door to school. And she's,
right.
you know, got her mind in the right place. But I think the sampling is kind of interesting, and it isn't that common.
Okay, cool. Well, I just, this parenting this still confuses me.
For other parents, though, you know, the idea of putting boundaries around when and how long – these are the things that are important, not just social media, but, you know, any kind of using technology. It's so enticing to kids, and it's so addictive. And children, especially high school kids, they're in such a vulnerable stage of wanting to be seen and needing to get feedback from others that they are the ripest victims for, you know, really abusing social media and really abusing really all of their technology. And the thing is right. that is more painful in some – more – difficult, I should say, for kids to learn how to react face-to-face to each other than it is online. And so I think kids a lot of times will kind of gravitate towards that online sphere because it feels more controllable to them. And you want your kid to not be doing that all the time. So, and not be spending too much time online and not, you know, have that be the source of their, you know, approval from others.
Right. That's a fascinating point, actually. One other question about this. I see screen time and limiting screen time specifically being used as a punishment in homes. What's the risk-reward punishment dynamic around screen time? Like, what should parents really, like, if you have to do this in order to get this? Or is it something that it shouldn't be associated with negative? It should just be scheduled.
So I'd start with scheduling boundaries, and it depends on the age of the kids. So, you know, this is part of that rite of passage. Every year you're going to want to readjust that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would start with boundaries around, especially before school and especially before bedtime. So those times are really sacred for kids' emotional development. And so, you know, I would really be careful about how much time they're going to be on their screens before they go to bed and how much time they're going to be on their screens as they're preparing for their day. So starting with that, in terms of punishment, if they violate the rules mm-hmm. around screen time, then the best punishment is to give them even less screen time.
Okay.
But if they violate the rules around keeping their bedroom clean, I think I'd find another punishment.
Okay, good. So not quid pro quo.
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. Kit, it's always a pleasure. I hope you can come back in next time you're in town.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Thank you.
Love chatting with you, Jason.
That was Kit Yarrow. As well as being a friend of the show, Kit is a consumer psychologist, professor, speaker, and Time Magazine contributor. She's also the author of bestseller Decoding the New Consumer Mind. And she's a solid Twitter follow at GenBuy, GenBuy. For links to Kit's work and all of our sourcing, please check the show notes article. It's posted every week at KGORadio.com. Coming up after the break, we go back to school, this time online and from anywhere.
We have students who want to accelerate, right? So they're bored in their traditional classroom, and they want to be able to move a lot faster. On the other end of the spectrum, we have students who want to move a little bit slower because they might be struggling with a few subjects or a grade. We have students who have health challenges or are being bullied in school, so they want to come out of that traditional brick-and-mortar experience and go to school online.
Virtual schools for K-12 students is next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Please stick around.